everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.
I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that out loud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of how to not have trash politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation, we're giving you personal healing, we're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Scene, the podcast.
So Nina Simone once said that it is the artist's duty to reflect the times. And I find that quote to be powerful, an everlasting truism, girl. And the fact is, I mean, what is art if it's not responding to the things that are emergent, that are happening in our own damn lives? So I've been thinking about the ways that we often, well, I often, find laughter and giggles in the horrible and sometimes even mundane shit. The ways that laughing together can often bring us closer together, and how a lot of us don't actually have like a sweet fucking clue about what it means to laugh at somebody else's expense and how deeply indignifying that can be. I'm so excited for us to record this episode tonight. As you know, I've admired comedy and enjoyed comedy for such a long time. Over my life, I've created this like alter ego of myself that is a comedian in my head, which is probably why the show Insecure was so funny and relatable. And I want to talk to you about that, you know, how you think or if you think good comedy should be relatable, and know from you, you know, what is your thought of the role of comedy? How can we use it in affirming and humanizing ways as opposed to in dignifying and humiliating ways?
So we did things a little bit differently in our recording tonight. You sent me a bit of an introduction to what we're going to be talking about before we recorded, which is what everybody just heard. And I love this. We should keep doing this because it just made me even more excited to record this episode. So you've been wanting to do an episode.
This is like a teaser. Listen to you teasing us. Come on. Okay. Give it to us.
You have been wanting to do an episode about comedy for a long time, but I think maybe weren't totally sure of like the angle or how exactly you were going to approach it. Is that right?
Exactly. Like I had a bunch of questions that I've been thinking about for a while, but the inspiration hadn't been striking. Like I didn't know when would be an appropriate time. And this feels like an appropriate time given it is the year of our Lord 2022. We have all participated in consuming media concerning the slap that was heard from around the world. And I think it's really important for us to also have real honest conversations about, like, because we giggle so much together. And I think a large part of our just how we've begun our friendship was on like watching shows and just laughing and talking and being able to consume media. And naturally, we are very chatty people about media that happen and things that are happening kind of in the world. And for some reason as well, talking about celebrities is actually like kind of a conduit for us to talk about other things that are happening. Like it's weird. It feels disconnected, but it also feels like deeply important for us to speak to. And so here we are, girl. I just want to talk to you and ask you the question, but I'm going to ask you the question about like what gets to be funny. But I think it feels like a really important time. And also I wouldn't want to talk about this with anybody else but you, because like we've laughed our asses off so much together.
Just like until a millisecond before we started recording in earnest, we were laughing. I also want people to know that we're recording on March 29th, so it's even closer to the date. My entire TikTok feed has just been singularly focused. But this feels really appropriate for us to talk about together because I think there can be a tension sometimes between comedy, or at least the comedy industry, and values, like social justice values, right? Valuing people.
Yeah.
Thinking deeply about how people are affected by things and how we relate to each other and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I think we're both people who have such a genuine love for comedy. And I know for me, sometimes there's been quite a dissonance because of the fact that so many of the people that are creating comedy have such, in my opinion, terrible
terrible values and terrible
yeah. things to say. And they're the opposite of thoughtful about their craft. And yeah, so it's been kind of confusing, but I don't think it has to be. I don't think it should be. So I'm glad
I agree.
Yeah, yes. That we can talk about this.
Me fucking too. I mean, I think more than anything else, comedy is in the bag of art, right? Like it has to be considered as an art form. It has to be considered as like some kind of connection to humanity. How people want to like use that, apply that, really changes. I feel like some people are just inhumane, you know? And I think that what just spoke to me and what I really appreciated what you just said is like, it doesn't have to be a disservice to our sense of what's right. Comedy, in my opinion, I think that the best comedy is like connected to being able to see what's happening and like actually comment in astute, wacky, wild ways. But before we talk about that, because you look like you're nodding your head, yes, would you agree?
Yes.
Long answer. Short answer, yes. Long answer.
If the comedy is focused on people and what's happening, it is most funny when it's aligned with my sense of truth and what's right.
Yeah.
I think there can also be a lot of comedy that's just, you know, silliness and things that are fictional and totally unrelated. But yes, I completely agree. And I'm glad that you used the term sense of what's right, because I think when we talk about what's funny, a sense of humor is something that is felt and is not always something that you can, you know, intellectually explain.
Yeah.
So I think that is part of where a lot of the conflict, I think, sometimes comes from around comedy, because there are so many comedians who feel like if someone says this isn't funny because, you know, it's racist or it's, you know, it's punching down in whatever way, they think, oh, well, you obviously have no sense of humor because comedy isn't about these intellectual arguments. And I think what I would say is that, yes, our sense of humor is a sense and it's a reaction, you know, it's something that we can't necessarily control or explain.
Yeah.
But it's very informed by our experiences and our worldviews and our sense of what's true and our sense of what's right.
Yeah.
So I think that there's such a strong connection between our sense of what's right and our sense of what's funny. And I wish that more comedians could admit that.
Yes. Yes. And here's the thing for me. It's like, if you see comedy as an art, and I think most people who are comedians would say it's an art form, it's a fine art, it's a performance art, right? It takes so much talent to be able to like think on your feet and be creative and make stories and connect even things that are happening contextually in your, where you actually are physically present at the time, connecting that into making it, you know, enjoyable for other people. So that's an art. We can agree that it's an art, but like if the artists duty is to reflect the times. What if you're not tuned into the times? What if you're like the person who gets to sort of skate around or skirt around the reality of things because things have been pandered to you or catered to you and you don't even see that? Like, to me, comedy should be some, there should be an intelligence to it. And I don't mean like highbrow or like academic or just satirical, where it's always talking about, like, you know, dropping knowledge and connecting the dots between like different world wars and Napoleon Bonaparte, like not that type of shit, but like intelligent, meaning that it's like tuned in, like intelligence meaning tuned into people. Because if it's an art, if comedy and being a comedian is an art form, you have to be able to be like responsive to your audience. So who are you writing for? Is my biggest question for so many comedians is like, who is your audience? Who is supposed to be the benefactor of this, you know, hard work that you're pouring into this punchline? Who is the punchline? And I feel like so often in this conversation, it's like, to me, the laziest jokes are ones in which the punchline are like the lowest hanging fruit, the people who are othered the most. I find that to be lazy. I find that to be an affront to this idea of something being a craft. It's like, I just copied and pasted the thing. I Googled it. I like snipped it, you know, and here's my joke. It's like, okay, this feels to you, what you said before, punching down. It doesn't feel like it's connected to humanity in a way that I have expectations about comedy being at least connected to my humanity.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that I think explains why so many of the comedians who have these terrible opinions about comedy are so privileged. Mm. They have such immense privilege. They're usually straight, white, cis men. Sometimes they're Black, but all of those other categories.
it's basically the categories of comedians. Continue, please.
I mean, yeah, unfortunately, most of the most successful ones, but because they are so often the default, it makes sense that I feel like if you were to ask a lot of them that question, who's your audience, they would just say people with a sense of humor. And I think it's also connected to a lot of these same people's idea that women are not particularly funny, you know, things like that.
Totally.
Because to them, they're so used to being the default. And this is just another way that they think that their sense of humor is universal, the same way that they think that everything else about them is universal. Mm. And if anybody else has something different, it's because they don't have a sense of humor instead of understanding what hits you as funny is so informed by who you are in the world and how, again, all those things I said before, like what is true to you and how you see the world and what your experiences have been.
Mm-hmm. And I find that like there's something, the comedy that I appreciate the most is the comedy that has me in mind. Like there's an intentionality, there's like a specificity, there's a thoughtfulness about not even like who the audience is, because the person who's telling the joke is coming from a place, maybe a social location that I feel like that resonates. I can track that feels similar. And so it's interesting thinking about like the ways that if you don't have anybody in your life that like has a different experience than you, or if you've never experienced difference, that you like you as a different person and that as like a negative connotation, and if you like to your point like you're the default, what hurts for you, you know, what is deeply crossing boundaries for you is going to be so off the charts different, because like there's so little investment in trying to keep you down. There's so much invested in building you up and creating this almost sense of delusion around who you are and like how you are the arbiter and purveyor of like what is like funny, interesting, worth even joking about, all of those things. Mm-hmm. And it's like kind of going back to what I said before is like, what if you're not clued into what's happening? And I think that so many people who are able to make a living actually out of comedy and are not clued into what's happening. Or at least it's not that they're not clued in. It's like their version of like humor is so tied to subjugating other people. It's not tied to shining a light on anything that's actually transformative or real or interesting or curious. It's like, let me step further into this delusion of like superiority, which feels like so many of the comedians and actors and, you know, people who perform that we've been exposed to our whole lives. And so suddenly when other artists or other comedians come in and they're saying things and doing things differently, I find that to be so refreshing.
Absolutely. It's a low bar, but I was so happy to hear Desus and Mero. I think it was on Hot Ones, maybe, that they were talking about how, yeah, there's lots of things that they've made jokes about in the past, and as they get older and they meet people from maybe some of those communities that they were joking about, they realize that actually, like, that's not cool, it's not funny. And it's not that they're being forced to no longer joke about that because you're not allowed to say anything anymore.
I know, right?
It's that they genuinely don't want to because they don't think it's funny anymore.
Yeah.
And similarly, I've noticed that there has been some comedy things that I remember, you know, 15 years ago watching and thinking it was so funny, and then recently going to watch it again and being like,
holy shit.
Wow. And not even just this isn't cool. Again, not what these comedians will tell themselves.
Yes.
Not that I think it's funny, but I'm like, oh, but that's not cool. I have to not, you know, say it's not funny. Genuinely not finding it funny and genuinely being like,
yeah,
I remember how great I thought it was, and I cannot imagine for the life of me why, because it's not funny. It's just lazy, like you said, and tired and all of those things. So it kind of makes you realize that maybe a lot of these comedians are going decades and not growing at all as a person, which is very sad.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. I love Desus and Mero, as you know. We're both obsessed. They're just so funny to me. I love watching, because I think that they do a really cool thing, which is they show you that you can be literally ridiculous, funny ass dudes, like really, really fucking hilarious, and you can still be in the pocket. And in the pocket meaning you can still be like ascribing dignity to other people. You can still be like, you know, showing up for people, for the people who are like the most marginalized, and just in the way that they frame and set up their comedy, what they won't joke about. And you can tell the way that they do their podcast, even their shows, like it's unique in that. And I think that that requires, to like you said, like an element of growth. Like you have to be able to like be taking in and being in connection. Like what you just described is like they met people from different, from all these different backgrounds and communities. And they were like, okay, we can't be rocking like this anymore. Like that's not, like we have a responsibility as a human being to like show up in this very specific way, which is just like not making people who are marginalize the butt of jokes, because that's pretty fucking whack.
Yeah. And it's just interesting highlighting and emphasizing that humanity, because I think I hear just so many comedians talking about how comedians are, as a group, like some of the most miserable people in the world, and how a lot of them have really bad depression and addiction issues and things like that, and how humor is like an early coping mechanism that they learn because of their terrible childhoods and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so interesting, I guess, to see how that plays out. And again, people are so opposed to seeing comedians as humans who sort of have the same, who are a part of society like anybody else. Like, why is it that this one thing is supposedly exempt from every moral code and every like relational principle and every, like, I just don't really understand why people think that, except
I love you. You're killing me.
It's confusing. Except again that like it's a sense of humor, but again it can adapt over time, and like food is also a preference. I've heard Jerry Seinfeld say sense of humor is a more personal thing than what kind of food you like.
Okay.
And okay, like let's take that metaphor. I don't think he wasn't necessarily using it in that context to defend all of these things, although he might. But taking that, like if food tastes good, is it okay if it poisons people because it tasted good?
And questions that need answers.
Yeah. And if you had a certain type of food that you loved when you were five, and that was the only thing you would eat when you were five, are you going to go the whole rest of your life and never try another kind of food or never?
Yeah. There's such a thing as bad medicine.
Yeah. What if it was McDonald's? Like, what if like your parents only got you fast food? Or are you just going to like eat that for your entire life and eat nothing else, even though it's poisoning your insides?
Yeah. And what's coming up for me when you're mentioning like that analogy of like eating something that's like bad for you, right? It's like, I feel like as lots of comedians discuss, like share that idea of comedy is this space where I can have, I don't know, some, the joy that I was like exempt from as a child or whatever it might be, that sort of idea that like all comics are miserable people, but they're able to like see something worth making light of despite the horrific things that they might have endured or with the way that they see things. That to me, that creates like there's a level of expectation that I now have of that person. Like I find that to be like a pretty important role that you should play. If you are able to be, it's kind of like alchemy. If you're able to take things that are like sad and horrible and make like be able to create something and make that light or make that or transform that, that there's a responsibility to that. But if you're transforming something that's horrible, the way that you actually feel internally, right? And then you're creating some sort of humor around something, but what it is actually doing is turning that into other harm that others are experiencing. To me, I'm kind of like, that feels lazy. That feels like a cop out. That feels like you're abusing that honor of alchemy. And that's what I think artists are. They alchemize what's happening in the world. So are comics. And that means you have to do it in a way that's like actually transforming it for the better, as opposed to kind of maintaining or doling out the harm that you have metastasized inside of yourself, you know?
Yeah, there's a couple things there that really hit me. And one is I really appreciate you talking about the alchemy and the responsibility to the gift, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's something that I've heard people talk about more with, you know, if somebody's blessed with a singing voice or something, right. And, yeah, you know, take care of that. That's like a gift that was given to you. Mm-hmm. And I've never really heard anyone talk about that when it comes to comedy. And I really appreciate that perspective. And just the way that you talked about that, about sort of transforming this terrible thing that happened to you when you were younger, it makes me think of how there's a lot of kids who experience or witness abuse, and many of them grow up to be wonderful people who really want to protect those who are vulnerable. And some of them grow up to be abusers. And kind of similarly, okay, you had this terrible childhood, and then you want to grow up and just hurt people.
Yeah.
And you don't care. You think this is bringing you joy. It's making you laugh. So you don't care who it hurts.
Yeah.
Versus, well, what if you took this gift that you had and actually did something good with it?
Yeah. And I think like the something good could be so good. Like there's so, this like, it reminds me of, the way that I felt when I first came across a Black Lady sketch show, I was like, oh my God, It's coming back so soon. And here's the thing that I love about all like the depth and breadth and like space that exists when you are using that like gift of making light in some way, in a way that is affirming for people, is like, I think it's funny to make outrageous comedy that's centered on like stretching reality, like taking the things that exist, the power relations, the dynamics, the things that we are all kind of aware of as people who are sentient beings and also living in like brown and black bodies, right? Subverting those existences, those things that we know to be true, and flipping things on their head and then like laughing at that shit. And I found that to be really true about a Black Lady sketch show. It was like making the shit that feels mundane about black womanhood and making that into something that's like, oh, that's a superpower now. That's like a thing that like you just never would have thought, you know, and the audacity of it, but also how wild is it? How silly is it? How goofy is it? Like that, it also, for me, my brain was like so active watching the three seasons that they've had, three seasons.
I think season three is about to start.
Okay, here we go. So two seasons that they've had so far, because what it showed me was like other people are finding some funnies in the misery that like I'm feeling too, but they're not making me feel more miserable about it. We are having a ball laughing at the absurdity of that thing. And I think that like there's lots of different types of comedy based off of what you find funny. There's slapstick, you know, physical humor, right? Like, and sometimes I like a good slapstick comedy. I think that shit is hilarious sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I also think that like you have to be paying attention. There has to be more in your repertoire than just one kind of way of like generating a laugh. And, you know, then you have to ask yourself the question, like a laugh at whose expense, right? Like who do I determine is like worth demeaning or even not even demeaning? Because maybe your intention is not to demean, but the impact of what you're doing is demeaning. So maybe it's like, I just wonder how much you said it really well before, how much we don't hold accountable comics or people who are providing some kind of alchemy in these types of ways to the standards and the changing reality of our world. Like you cannot keep on making jokes at the expense of, I'm not going to say out the list of different identities, but like there's tons of people that we know are marginalized. We just know that. Like to me, it's no longer like, I didn't know that this thing is a disability. I didn't know that this is, why are you making fun of people's appearance? That's fucking wild. That's wild. And yes, will I say that there are some times when you can make fun of a Chad or Brad's appearance? Absolutely yes. But here's the thing about social positioning that we all have to be mindful of. It exists, right? Like you have to be conscious of who the fuck you are. And I feel like sometimes, back to what you said before, people see themselves as the everyman. They don't, they're just like, I'm not what's that shit? I'm not white, I'm normal.
Yeah.
Like that. It's very weird.
It is. Yeah, there is no such thing as an everyman.
No, it doesn't exist. And I think to that end, it's like, yes, you might be that, you might be the everyman because you might be like a cishet white man. So you really see yourself as an everyman. But I'm like, okay, so you see yourself as everybody else. If you saw yourself as everybody else, then wouldn't you have a responsibility to kind of know everybody else? Like, if you were like everybody, then you should know everybody. There, boom, like what the fuck? And I just find it to be, once again, like there's a laziness that I find frustrating. And I think that there's like a real, what's the word I'm looking for? Shirking of responsibility when it comes to being able to like say, hey, this isn't funny anymore. And maybe there's other things that are funny that we could be giggling about that aren't queer folks, black folks, brown folks, disabled folks, like folks of many different marginalizations. And I'm like, when are we going to all get the memo? I don't know. I have no sweet clue. But it continues to really disappoint. And at the end of the day, like, continue to perpetuate, like, all of the harmful things that people are actually enduring on, like, an individual and community basis or level.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I have so little faith, you know, because I think these are a lot of people who don't want to change. And I think especially when, for whatever reason, comedy has become this supposed exception, you know, like this thing that is outside of every other, you know, norm and value that we have. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really easy place for a lot of people to hide. It just makes me wonder if it's a coincidence, you know, that so many people who have such terrible things to say about marginalized groups and about, like, some of the most horrible things that happen in the world. Is it a coincidence that so many of them work so hard to make it as comics? Or is it more and more becoming that this is a place that these people are kind of trying to hide out? You know, it's like this little safe haven for them. Because I don't think it was, of course, there's always been comedy that was offensive and terrible.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
But I would be really curious to know if some of these same things that comics are always saying now to try to excuse anything they want to say, if that was always the case. I mean, a lot of them I know will cite George Carlin, who had a lot to say about freedom of speech and things like that. Mm-hmm. But George Carlin actually also had a lot to say about responsibility to not punch down and how that's not what comedy should be. So I would really be curious for somebody who maybe knows more about the history of stand-up comedy in particular, if they could tell us this rhetoric that's so common now to excuse all of this. When did this become so prevalent?
Yeah, that's really interesting, especially because I think oftentimes the way people get out of taking responsibility for saying harmful things is to label it as, like, oh, you just find it offensive. It's not described, or today, at least anyways, we don't talk about it necessarily in the context, especially within comedy, of that joke was harmful. Like, that still feels like new. I think that we do in our circles, but I think, like, the broader lexicon of, like, thinking about art, do people say it's harmful? They say it's offensive. And offensiveness feels like it can be so subjective. And there's a way that offensiveness can become really codified to be dismissed, because it's okay, you're clutching your pearls, live a little. Or it's these people who are so, you know, pro wokeness, oh, just loosen up, like, you know what I mean? That word becomes so loaded. And I think that I'm not even going to say comedians, but I think artists in general, I would say, because I want to include myself into that bucket, you don't necessarily see yourself as, you might not think about offensiveness. You might think of, like, is it profane? Is it disturbing? But, like, offense feels like, well, that's just like a taste thing, or that's like an upbringing thing, or you could be considered too uppity or something like that. So you're not necessarily pandering to that. And there's something about that language feels like it creates that getting people off the hook ism. You know what I mean?
Yes. And let me tell a story about how a lot of times jokes and supposed quote-unquote comedy is very much violence, and I'm not speaking metaphorically. So when I was in undergrad, there was a group of people that I was connected to sort of through mutuals. I wasn't super close with them, but we knew each other and sometimes socialized because of mutuals. And some of the men in that group were very much this type, like the I'm sure they thought they were like, you know, comedy connoisseurs and very much the sort of like, if I say something shocking, that makes it like funny because it's so avant-garde and it's like all of these people who just are so uptight.
Yes.
So I was a baby feminist at the time and I had discovered feminism because of all of the sexual violence that I had been experiencing. And so they, I think, knew this and I think had, you know, whatever similar judgments, right, about like, oh, you're just so uptight and feminazi and, you know, that kind of thing. So anyways, I one night was at a dinner that I was invited to by some of these mutuals. But just the way the seating ended up, I was sort of close to the end and some of these guys were around me and I wasn't really close to the people that I was closer friends with. And because of all of these dynamics, those guys, I guess, thought that it would be funny to essentially just tell nonstop rape jokes.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. So this continued and continued, and I was trying to just ignore it and trying to just like get through it and really didn't know what to do. And by the end of the dinner, I felt like I was gonna die.
Yeah.
And I by this time already had PTSD, and part of how that was manifesting was these really intense body sensations of like panic and thinking, am I having a heart attack? Am I like, I can't breathe, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. And so by the end of this dinner, I was like freaking out. I basically like trying so hard to not let them see me cry or anything like that, paid and practically ran out of the restaurant to try to find a cab home. I would normally would have taken transit being a student, but got in a cab and got home and then immediately was like throwing up. And that entire night I was just having like, it was just like basically a several hours long panic attack. And I very much believed I was going to die. I just remember like lying on the bathroom floor and just being like, I don't know what's wrong with my body, but it's something. Mm. And like, I'm going to die. I don't think I'm going to wake up. And it was one of the worst, like if I were to think of, you know, some of the worst nights of my life, it's really right up there because of how terrified I was.
Yeah.
And then actually after that, I couldn't even go to school for like 2 weeks because I could barely eat anything and I couldn't get out of bed. And it was like this, my body was just in such distress.
Wow.
So that, at the time, you know, I didn't have anyone to help me understand why that happened to me. Like, why would these things that somebody's saying, like, why would it affect my body like that? So I think I knew I was upset about what they were saying, but I think it took a long time for me to really understand, you know, that what they were doing was violent, even though they didn't touch me. And that, you know, by observing my body, you can see that it was just as harmful than if they had, you know, physically touched me or been violent in that way.
Yeah. Well, first of all, girl, I'm so fucking sorry that that happened to you. That's so upsetting. And where I get deeply frustrated with the notion that words are just words or language doesn't matter is like, the reality of it is it is entirely possible that some words don't hurt some people. And that happens. Not all words have weight for some people, but imagine the words that have weight for other people. And I think that there's this idea attached to, oh, it's just words. If you don't like the words or the language, you're sensitive. It's a you problem, is that people who say those types of things think that it's other people are the problem, when they don't understand that they're actually the one who's so devoid of humanity. It's such a weird tell. It's like, I'm not human enough to see that this matters for you, and I just feel like being this inhuman. That's what I hear. And it's wild, because why would you want to prove your own inhumanity to other people, but also like deep down when you go home, when you are by yourself, when you are alone with yourself? I wonder the degree to which people have that ability to like reflect or to see themselves in the mirror, like literally see themselves in the mirror, brushing your teeth, whatever. Do you see yourself? Do you know the types of things you do? And like, how do we get to that point where we're able to say, we see the things that we're causing in others, and we think like, let me do more of that. That to me, like, and maybe I have a really unrealistic expectations for how I think that all of us should just be existing in the world. But kind of going back to the big question you said before is like, why do we think that being funny, you know, because that's what it is, being funny or having people laugh at you or having people notice that you're funny, why does that become the biggest, most important thing of all time? Like, what is that? Because that's what it is. When we break it down, it's not just a comedian having the ability. It's that we should be able to laugh freely. And what laughter, I think, means a lot of the time can be like, we laugh because we are hurting. We laugh because we are feeling, you know, large amounts of joy or deep amounts of joy. We also laugh because we're deeply uncomfortable. And I wonder about the discomfort piece. Like, it's like, what are people who are so obsessed with being funny not being real with themselves about? Because I know for myself, when I am making the most amount, well, making jokes, because I'd be making hella jokes all the motherfucking time, I feel like my life is a comedy. But I know that it also serves a purpose to like create distance between me and how I'm actually feeling. So there's something about telling jokes at the expense of other people to get to the point where you're dehumanizing them or making them experience or feel indignity, right? That you're not dignifying somebody. That word is huge for me. It's like, how can I like make everybody, make people around me, how can I myself to myself dignify myself, humanize myself, affirm myself? And it's like, that shit blows my motherfucking mind. It feels unconscionable, right? To be so disconnected, or at least to be so, I guess, we all need those barriers to stay up in some way, shape, or form. And it's like, maybe for some people, comedy allows them to like engage with what they think is humanity, laughter, but it actually is like devoid of it when it's at the expense of people who you're harming. And that's not there. Like, that ability to witness it, I don't think, or to take that in, is not there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just makes me think about energy and how so much of our communication is nonverbal, and it might be on a, you know, on a facial expression, or it might be so subtle that we can't actually put a finger on if there's anything physical happening, or why can we feel, you know, like when the energy shifts in a room.
Yeah.
And it just makes me think about how, you know, for people to cause harm in this way, they either have to sort of feel some of those impacts and enjoy that.
Right.
On the more sadistic part of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. Or not care, be defensive about yeah. it. Like, no, the problem is you. The same way, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times if you confront somebody about something they've done to hurt you, instead yeah, of apologizing, totally. They'll get defensive.
Yeah.
Or just not be aware of it. Somebody I saw was reposting a clip of Chris Rock that I totally forgotten about how somebody close to him in his life thought that maybe he had Asperger's.
Okay.
And then when he went to sort of get tested, he found out that he didn't have that, but he did have a nonverbal processing disorder.
Okay.
And that he isn't really able to, or has much more difficulty with picking up on anything nonverbal, and how that made a lot of things kind of fall into place for him, because his relationships, he said his whole life, were just kind of off. It's hard to kind of put his finger on how. And
this is Chris Rock, right?
Chris Rock, yeah. So,
okay, wow.
It does make me wonder if there could be, you know, some of these guys who there is other reasons as well about why they seem to really not get it. But regardless, like, I think it's just, again, I like that this conversation, we're bringing comedy into the realm of the entire rest of humanity and how
we're all of us exist
because it's wild how much we can't even have the conversation most of the time, because so many comics and comedians and people who are fans of comedy are just so committed to this idea that somehow comedy is this like exception.
Yeah.
And it's not, nothing is, all of, we're all being humans together all of the time. So I really appreciate that we can actually have this conversation where we talk about comedy with the same standards and the same questions and the same lenses as with everything else.
Because it deserves that. Mm. Because it needs that. Mm-hmm. Just like everything else and every other form of anything else can perpetuate mass amounts of harm. You know, that's so interesting. And I'm grateful that you mentioned this, because I haven't, like, I think there is a uniqueness about being able to actually talk about comedy free from the, I don't even know, the shackles of, you know, comedy is a superior art form that has to be living out in the solar system outside of the pocket that we can talk about. And I think at the end of the day, everything's on the table. And like I said before at the beginning, like, there's something so critical about being able to have these conversations, not because it's about like any individual comedian, like not because it's about like this person, the way that this person jokes is bad, but it's like, as a society, I think we have to make, and as like people, as community members, we have to get to a place where we're able to recognize like what is not amusing, like what is amusing and what is not amusing. And I think that like when we peel back the layers of what we think is amusing for a lot of people, what is amusing is like the degradation of other people. That's amusing to them. And so until the people don't exist anymore, or they have changed their opinions about what is amusing, I think we should be here always asking all these questions and, you know, annoying the comedians, because I think both of us deeply appreciate that as a craft. So anyone could get it. That's the end.
Ha 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 ha.